Good morning, Greater Oak. How's everybody doing today? Sydney, I see you're up in the front now. You're getting better. She had to sit in the back last week, recovery for her leg. Anyway, my name is Gary Chappell, and I'm happy to be here. And I have an announcement, something I need to tell you about. Some of you may have noticed this on the information booth. If not, if you wish to pick one up, there's a little flyer out there called 21 Days of Prayer and Sacrifice. You say, what's this all about? Well, let me tell you a little bit what it's all about. My wife and I support different missionaries. And last fall, one of these missionaries was in our home, and he was giving us a progress report on what was going on. We support a school. We helped to fund a school that got built in the Democratic Republic of Congo on Idwiji Island. And now we're helping to feed those kids now 3 times a week. And we were getting an update on all this that was going on. And it was the first time this missionary had been to our old house, but we'd moved to a new house. And we'd moved to a house half the size of our other house. And he's asking about it, and we're talking about it. Now we're sitting here with a man, like I said, literally, who's going to propose to us, could we help feed these kids 3 days a week instead of only 2? Okay? Could we fund that? Increase it by at least 50%? Could we do that? And in the middle of the conversation, when he's talking about our house, we said, well, we only have 1 bathroom. And the real problem with that is when we have, you know, the kids over for the holidays and people are staying, we got maybe up to 10 people there for 4 or 5 days. And he's like, oh wow. Only one bathroom for 10 people. And while he's sitting there talking, you're thinking about, you know, these kids were helping feed. You know how many bathrooms they got? They got 0 bathrooms. Even wherever they relieve themselves, there's no plumbing. Okay? And you're sitting there and you're forced to go, oh. And you're comparing what our life is like and what we consider difficult and sacrificial to what our brothers and sisters are dealing with in other parts of the world. And so my wife leads this organization, this group here in Greater Alton called Compassion in Action. And they've decided to do 21 days of prayer and sacrifice. Not prayer and fasting, but prayer and sacrifice. And what they're doing is inviting anyone who would wish to partake in this to join them for 21 days to pray for 5 different missionary groups that we are aware of. One of them is our own Mark Sakimpi's mother. Where's Mark at? Wait, Mark's not in here. There he is in the back. And you can find out all about these. There's a brief description in this brochure. And there's also QR codes down here to join Facebook groups where they actually have some videos from these missionaries, tell what they're doing and telling you what to pray for them. Okay? And we're asking you also during those 21 days and not only to pray for them, but to decide to do some kind of sacrifice. What are you willing to sacrifice in your life to help these missionaries do the work of Jesus in other parts of the world? Okay? And yeah, that may be something simple like I'm gonna not, you know, maybe eat lunch out every day at work and I'm not gonna do that. You don't have to fast. Maybe you're gonna take your lunch, or maybe you're gonna go to whatever's cheaper for lunch, and you're gonna set that money aside. And at the end of the 21 days, there will be a donation collected. Their goal is to collect $1,000. Seems like a small goal to me. But it's specifically for the Pipes International group, which is the group that's correct, right? I said this, okay. She said she was going to correct me if I said things wrong, so. And she hasn't done it yet, so suspicious that I wasn't getting everything right. But guys, we invite you to do that. To spend 21 days praying and focusing on it, and also at the same time sacrificing, saying you're going to give up something to help. And there's many ways to help. There's obviously just generic to give to the missionary fund where they're just, you know, supporting missionaries to go preach Jesus. There's other specific needs. The Pipes International, like we talk about, and the school on Idwiji Island. If you would like to sponsor a child, you know, for $30 a month, like other organizations do, you can do that. And you can have access, you know, get pictures of the child and updates for the child and all that. And there's just other basic needs that go along with this. And we'd love to tell you more if you have questions. We can tell you about what all that does for people and how it helps them. But we invite you guys to be a part of that. Okay? It's not a requirement. It's an invitation. How's that, Sam? Anyway, the reason I'm here today is to talk about what does Jesus do with politics. Is anybody else as excited about this as me? You know, I don't know about you, but I was curious as all get out, what was politics all about? Okay, I remember being a senior in high school, and there was a young man in my college prep English class, and we were writing our one term paper that we had to write, you know, to prepare ourselves for college, and asked him what he was going to write his on, and he says, I'm going to write mine on Democrats. No, he wasn't a Democrat. You know, because I was talking about writing on my paper about the Olympic boycott from 1980, and he's talking about, what are your sources? I said, well, Track and Field News and Sports Illustrated. He says, that's like me writing my paper based off what the Young Republican is my only source. You know, writing about Democrats. And I had no idea which I thought was good, which I thought was bad. I had no idea what either of them really even taught. Just didn't know. Then I get married, and my wife's family, a branch of it, one of the branches of her family tree, is very political, okay? And that branch has a few branches off of it that are extremely political, okay? And Susan and I are out to eat with one of these extremely political branches. We're at the Olive Garden down in Fairview Heights. This is back in, I want to say it's around 1992, 1993. I think it was after the election of 92. And we were talking, and they are all Democrats. And I'm just curious. I really am. And we're talking, and I ask her aunt, and I said, okay, and I know you're Democrat, and I know you support Democratic ideology and Democratic candidates, but what if the best person isn't the Democrat? Are you willing to vote for the, she says, I always vote for the best person. It always happens to be a Democrat. And then, this is funny, and I ask her about one of her other brothers who is also extremely political in the Democratic flavor, let's say. And he has six kids. And I said, what about Paul's six kids? Do they all follow him in these politics? And she says, well, you know, Scott does, because Scott's very outspoken. And he would just love to tell you about the bad stuff about Ronald Reagan. Or he would do that. And then he goes through her four girls. And yeah, this one, obviously, and this one. And this one I'm not real sure about, but I think so. And then she gets to his oldest son, Steve. She lowers her voice and she kind of leans in. Kind of glances around. She says, now, the Republican Party is the party of rich people. And Steve makes a lot of money. And I don't know. He doesn't talk about it. So I think he just might be a Republican. And guys, it was like, what in the world is this all about? And guys, we know since that was 30 plus years ago. And now in our world, it seems that politics has permeated everything. Okay? Anybody that was an adult back in 2020 can see it. I remember when COVID came and I had this extremely naive thought process that I kept to myself that said, maybe this will unite the nation because this is a non-political issue. I was wrong. And I could not believe how quickly it got politicized. How the other side was doing things wrong. How we took sides. And honestly, guys, in that time, you know, there was an intermingling from one side to the other. I mean, it was. People who would... Nah, don't get into it. You understand what I'm talking about. Because that's what politics is. And it's very polarizing in our country. And it's downright divisive in our country. And as a follower of Jesus, I am to have nothing to do with divisiveness. Yet we have an opportunity in this country. We have an opportunity for free speech. We have an opportunity to vote for who we want to vote for. And we have the opportunity when you put those all together to try to persuade each other to vote a certain way. And to think a certain way. And it's challenging. You know, I grew up hearing this. Don't talk, what should you not talk about at the holidays? Politics and religion. Now those are two separate topics. Okay? You could talk about politics and get into a fight, or you could talk about religion and get into a fight. Now you can talk about both and get into a fight all at the same time. And they combine them. Now most of you know, as I've been up here before, I do not believe there is one political party or ideology that is correct, that is ordained by God, that is the most correct. I believe both of them are both sides, and I know there's many variations of this, many issues that go both ways, or that can be split. And I don't believe that one is more godly than the other, or more ungodly than the other. They both have their positions I do believe that there's ungodliness represented by both political parties and every politician. Okay? And it's very difficult because you look at this and you go, oh, what do we do with this? You know, should we not pay our taxes? Well, I'll get to that in a minute. But guys, I just want to start talking out, you know, as we look at this, we really want to say, look, God, what's your position? Because this is what Jesus is. Jesus was God in the flesh when he came here on earth. How did he interact? And we could literally go on with this. This needs to be, if you want to do a deep dive on it, and I don't have the resources, I'm not capable of creating the resources for this, but it needs to be a 9-week or a 12-week or 13-week study to really look at some of these topics that I'm just going to mention. Okay? But in 1 Samuel chapter 8, the first time where you start seeing this desire for politics, this desire for, and really guys, and I had a hard time even coming up with a definition for politics. You know, it's kind of like the old politician said several years ago about pornography. He says, well, I don't know how to define it, but I know it when I see it. Okay? And when you went looking up definitions, you found a wide range of concisely what it is. And I found that there's really just two components to it. And this is my opinion. This isn't Bible, though I'm going to support one of them here in a minute with Bible. One is, it's a desire to control the thoughts and actions of others to give them power to make the world a better place. I mean, I believe that with all my heart, that the desire of most politics is to make the world a better place. And so guys, that's what it's about. The other thing is, and this is what you're going to see illustrated here in 1 Samuel chapter 8, is that we have a desire to not figure things out for ourselves. We really have a desire for somebody to tell us what to do. Look at this in 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 6 through 9. It says, but when they said, give us a king to lead us, this displeased Samuel. Now what's going on here? Let me back up. I'll give you the background to this. I can only put so many verses up there and read so many verses. But what's going on is Samuel is the last of what's considered a judge in the Old Testament. In the book of Judges, Samuel's the last one. And the judge, whoever was the judge, led the nation. They brought the word of God to him. They told him, hey, you need to repent. Hey, get on the stick. But there was a phrase that was used in the book of Judges, is that each man did what was right in his own eyes. And it's generally viewed as bad where people went and did evil, but it could also be viewed as, hey, they figured it out. They thought for themselves. Okay? But typically they needed, collectively, as a nation, they would do evil. And the judge would be raised up to set them back on course. Okay? And that's what's going on. And a lot of times it was the judge's son that would become the next judge. But anyway, Israel gets tired of this process. Samuel is the last judge, and his sons are not good people. And so they say, give us a king. Your sons aren't good people. And this is where we pick up the story. But when they said, give us a king to lead us, this displeased Samuel. So he prayed to the Lord. Side note. Have anybody ever been displeased with an elected official? Okay, let's read God's response. And the Lord said to him, listen to all the people are saying to you. It is not you they have rejected, but they have rejected me as their king. As they have done from the day I brought them up out of Egypt until this day, forsaking me and serving other gods, so they are doing to you. Now listen to them, but warn them solemnly and let them know what the king will who will reign over them will claim as his rights. And he goes on to tell them, he's going to draft your sons into war, and he's going to draft your daughters to do this, and he's going to take possession of your land, and he's going to tax you. All the things the king ended up doing. But God's going, give it to him. Let him have. And guys, what you see there is we have a desire to follow. You know, we are sheep that have went astray, so give us a shepherd. And we want to choose who he's going to be. And guys, that's our tendency. This next verse that I have in here in Matthew chapter 25, I throw it in here for this very reason. It's in Matthew 25. If you want to go read the whole story, I welcome you to it. But in verses 21 and 23, it says the same thing, talking about two different servants in the story. He says, his master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. And why is that in there, Gary? Because Jesus is telling a story that tells us that each one of us are going to have to stand before him on judgment day individually. We're not going to stand in front of Jesus and answer for our nation. We're not going to stand in front of Jesus and answer or stand, have a politician or even a preacher stand in front of Jesus, and we'll be behind them and they have to answer for it. We were just following them. That's not the way it's going to be. We have to have a desire to be a good and faithful servant ourselves. And that really needs to be the focus, I believe, of our lives and what we need to give attention to. So what does the government, very briefly, again, this gets into one of these things you want to dig on your own. You want to ask me questions or talk about it. I'd love to talk about it. But very briefly, what does the Bible teach us about the government? The first thing is that we're to submit to their authority. It says that in both Romans chapter 13 and in Matthew 23, where Jesus is talking about the religious politicians. Yes, they existed. Secondly, governments get their authority from God. So in Romans 13, that's what it says, that no authority exists that God didn't give the power to, the authority to. And so we're to submit to him because that comes from God. Submitting to your government is submitting to God. God has given them the responsibility of creating some semblance of order. And they have done that. Okay? And we're supposed to help create that order, or protect that order by submitting, not rebelling against them. Third thing is we're supposed to pay taxes. I've got that reference in Romans 13. I forgot. There's another reference. It's the most famous one where Jesus was asked about paying taxes. And he says, give to Caesar what's Caesar's. Give to God what's God's. Here you go. Here's the real kicker. We're supposed to thank God for and pray for our elected officials. I talked about this last year before the election. To try and to prepare everybody for if your man lost. And you've got to, Jesus expects you to pray when the other man wins. That's hard to take. I'll be honest with you, there's presidents I didn't want to pray for. And I didn't pray for. Okay? And I was wrong for doing that. Okay? The last thing there, and this is just a side note, it's okay to work for the government. Okay? I tell this joke before. My son applied for an internship with the Illinois Department of Transportation when he was in college. He was going to school to be a mechanical engineer. I said, it's okay if you take that internship, but if you work for the government, I will disown you. Has nothing to do with Jesus. Anyway, he didn't work for the government. He works for me. Works with me. I'm sorry. Works with me. Because the Bible is full of God's servants living faithful lives of allegiance to God as employees of an evil, ungodly nation. I mean, you go back and look at the life of Joseph. You go back and look at the life of Moses. You go look at Daniel. You even go look at Esther, where God wanted them to be people of influence inside an evil, corrupt government. And guys, I want to make sure you understand that, because there's a bunch of people, several people, I don't know, a bunch, that work for the government. Now, that doesn't mean you do all the evil stuff they want you to do necessarily. Okay? You submit to the government until they tell you to disobey God. And again, you get into all that. That's one of those things you want to discuss in a group, not listen to me talk about up here. So what does Jesus do when I expose my politics to him, guys? You see, because this is what we do. A lot of times we want to hide our politics. And guys, you want to know what my goal is for you. If you have strong political thoughts, is instead of taking them to each other, why don't you take them to Jesus? Because that's really what matters, isn't it? And we're going to look at some situations where this occurred. The first one, what's going to happen? What happens when I expose my politics to Jesus? The first thing that happens is Jesus exposes my allegiance. Okay? Guys, I the word worship, the most practical way that I can explain to you what worship is it's a pledging of allegiance. It's a recognizing God for who he is and what he's done, and not just saying, thank you, I'll go live my life, but saying, thank you, and I'm going to live my life in allegiance to you. I'm going to live my life the way I want you to do. I'm going to do the things you want me to do. That's what worship is. In Matthew chapter 16, we run into a situation. And I talk about this all the time because I think it is just so powerful and it's so appropriate for this, what I'm talking about. What happens in Matthew chapter 16 is Jesus is with his disciples and he asks this question. He says, who do people say the Son of Man is? And they go, well, some say you're Elijah or one of the prophets. Some say you're John the Baptist, reincarnated, you know. He's okay. Who do you say I am? And Peter speaks up first. He's the first to get the door open. And he says, you're the Christ. You're the Messiah. You're the anointed king. And you're the Son of the living God. And Jesus gets all excited for Peter. Oh my gosh, Peter, this was not revealed to you by man, but by God. And on this rock, I'm going to build my church. And woo! And it said from that time on, he began to teach them about what's going to happen. And he's going to suffer and he's going to die and he's going to be raised from the dead. And Peter heard this, and it says he took Jesus aside and began to rebuke him, saying, never, Lord, this will never happen to you. And here's Jesus' reply. He said, get behind me, Satan. You're a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. I don't know that he said it that way, but that's how I picture him saying it that way. He was not happy. He called him Satan. Now, how can a man have such opposite beliefs in 30 seconds? How can you go from this man, God's revealed this to you, that you're listening to the devil? How does it happen? Because he's a human being. And because, like I said, guys, we are human beings. And we, guess what? Just because we pledge our allegiance to Jesus doesn't mean all of our thoughts get straight. Okay? And guys, this is a political thought. Because it's very commonly understood and accepted that the disciples and all the Jews of Jesus' day thought the Messiah was going to be a political king. And so this idea of this king being killed, Peter's going, no, 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 no. And he may have even been, I won't let that happen. He may have been trying to reassure him. You remember, he's the one that when they're in the garden and they're arresting Jesus, Peter lops off that guy's ear. It's either really good aim or really bad aim. You take your pick. But he was standing up for, he's like, I'm not going to let that happen, Jesus. That's not going to happen to you. And Jesus, I don't believe very, it was polite at all about him, says, that thought does not come from me. That thought does not come from God. That's of human concerns. Guys, I think this is the most important thing you can take away today. And you take your life. And this applies to everything, guys. This applies to every aspect of your life. Not just the politics. And you need to ask yourself, and Jesus wants to ask you, are you focused on the concerns of God or merely human concerns? Are you willing to take your politics to Jesus and say, tell me what I should do with this? Show me the source of this thought process that I'm so much about. And see, guys, as you do that, I want to encourage, see, I have a tendency, I have to make intentional efforts to ask God if what I'm doing is okay or if a certain door is open or whatever, because I like to just kind of figure it out for myself. Anybody else that way? You know, several years ago, over 20 years ago now, I had a opportunity in business, or something I saw as an opportunity in business, and it was to pursue it. And I concluded that it was clear, because of all these open doors that I did not open, that I did not knock on, that I was not seeking to open, God must clearly be leading me down this path. And in the middle of walking down that path, I thought, have you really asked God about this? Have you really asked God about this? And 4 years later, and tens of thousands of dollars later, I had to abandon that idea. Guys, I wasn't willing to really ask. I think God could have avoided the losses. A few years later, back in 2014, this was, I remember plain as day, my wife and I we were into the car wash business, and we had an opportunity to buy two more car washes. We just bought our second, and this guy had made me a deal you would not believe on two more car washes. And Susan and I prayed about it, and we prayed for about 3 weeks, because the guy, he offered them to me, and then he ghosted me. Wasn't returning calls, wasn't returning texts. And so Susan and I prayed, and we prayed very plainly. God, if this door is open, show us plainly it's open. If the door is closed, show us plainly it's closed. After 3 weeks, I was able to track the man down, and he said, I've put him under contract with somebody else. Guess what? The door's closed. And it was very quickly after that, I remember telling my wife, I go, there's no way I could have handled those two. There's no way I could have handled this with everything else going on, because we were still in the glass business and I was still putting in auto glass and we were redoing a car wash. It's too much. But guys, you got to be willing to lay it in front of Jesus and say, guys, the biggest problem I have with believers claiming any political ideology or party is because it locks you in. And what the tendency is it's a sacred cow. Jesus, I want to follow you. But I'm not going to look at these. I'm not willing to give up these political thoughts. I'm not willing to even examine them, because I know they're right already. The way Peter knew he was right. Okay? You see what I'm saying? Human concerns. Human concerns. Second thing, guys, that Jesus exposes my ungodliness. My ungodliness. I love this, what we're going to look at here in Luke chapter 12. This is what it says. It says, someone in the crowd said to him, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Jesus replied, man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you? Then he said to them, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God. Now guys, you may view this as a stretch. I don't think it is. It's one man asking God to do something with one other man. But back to what I said about politics being the giving of power to those that think like me in an effort to control those who think differently for the purpose of making the world a better place. He's telling Jesus, I want you to tell my brother. I want you to control my brother. I want you to exercise your power and authority to tell my brother that he's supposed to split the inheritance with me. And we don't know if the dad's dead. We don't know what's going on. Presumably he was. But he's trying to say, listen, I want you to tell somebody else what to do. How many times have we thought that way? I wish this person didn't post these things. I wish this person didn't talk about these issues. I can't believe this person supports this politician. Guys, I've been in my position up here. I've been approached by people on both sides of the political aisle, just like this, saying, I want you to talk to the other side. I want you to address individuals on the other side. And one of those conversations that I had, I said, well, the problem is I'm going to have the same conversation with you as I do with them. You see, because the issue isn't having political concerns and political expressions, political opinions and expressing them. It's, do they align with God? That's the issue. And Jesus is going to expose your ungodliness. I don't know about you, but does Jesus' response sound kind of odd to you? He says, tell my brother to share his inheritance. And Jesus says, first of all, he says, that ain't my job. Okay? Who made me the arbiter of you guys? That's not my job. That's not what I'm here for. But the next thing he does, and then he looks at everybody else. It'd be like Jimmy asked the question, hey, Jesus, Gary, tell him to split my inheritance. And then I start talking to all you guys about being greedy. And there's all, and not only that, he spreads it out. There's all kinds of greed. Greed isn't just about money. Okay? It's not about that. And that's why I read that last verse, because in between verses 15 and 21 there, I invite you to go back and read that for yourselves. He tells a story about a rich young man who stored up stuff for himself, and God demanded his life. And he says, this is how it will be when whoever stores up for themselves but is not rich toward God. Ooh. See, now what might Jesus expose in me if I expose my politics to him? The first thing we've already talked about is he might expose a competing allegiance. That's what happened to Peter. We just looked at a competing allegiance. Second thing, he might find arrogance. I know what's better. I know what's best. And God, you need to do it. We might expose your desire to control. See, guys, a lot of times, I've said this before, I'll say it till I die. We have a desire to be God without being like God. You know, we want to make things a certain way, but we don't realize that's not how God works. You see, because he gave every one of us a choice of whether to obey him or not obey him. And he doesn't zap us into obedience. It may reveal a lack of faith or trust in God to truly deal with whatever you see as an injustice or a problem in this world. You know, guys, Jesus even told, you know, we're told not to pay back evil for evil, but we're to trust God to get justice to our enemies. And that's on a personal level. How much more on a widespread level? Third thing, and this is really combined here, is that Jesus is going to expose my motive. A very common story, very popular story. Let's read about this and we'll talk about it. Two verses, one's in Mark chapter 9. It says, they came to Capernaum. When he was in the house, he asked them, what were you arguing about on the road? But they kept quiet because on the way they had argued about who was the greatest. Sitting down, Jesus called the 12 and said, anyone who wants to be first must be the very last and servant of all. Now, very, very plainly, let's look at this right off the bat, guys. Jesus asked them what they're arguing about. And did you hear what they did? Nobody would tell him. That's what it's saying. They kept quiet. I don't know if they brushed it off. I mean, I can't imagine Jesus asking a question and all 12 of them going, whoop, who's going to speak first? Who wants to give us up? But Jesus addresses their motive just by being in his presence. Their motive is addressed. But one chapter later in Mark 10, this is what happens. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. Has anybody ever had your kids ask that question? I want you to tell me yes. I'm going to ask you a question now. I want you to tell me yes. Children, that's why they bring their mother. What do you want me to do for you? He asked. They replied, let one of us sit on your right and the other on your left in your glory. What are they asking? Again, they have this idea of Jesus being a political figure, a political king. And they say, we want you to give us positions, jobs, authority. And Jesus says, you got it all wrong. And guys, it's amazing to see what happens. How often do you examine your motive? I mean, whenever you think something very strongly or you think something very fervently, how do you look? What's my motive here? You see, guys, this went on all the time. I mean, there was multiple occasions. There were more occasions than this where the disciples were arguing and where Jesus is addressing this. Guys, I want to encourage you. Let Jesus expose your motive. Number four, Jesus shows me how to stay focused on my purpose. How to stay focused on my purpose. I love it when something big happens in the world and I don't know nothing about it. We went on vacation. Or I went on vacation. Susan didn't go. She didn't want to go, by the way, for all you that were asking. I went with my son and daughter and son and daughter-in-law and grandson and my daughter-in-law's mother. And we went up to Lake Superior and Jonathan and I got to spend a night on Oak Island. It's an amazing experience, but we kayaked out there and you just wasn't on their phone a lot, as much as you normally were. And I don't remember even what it was. Something happened. I go, oh really? Has that been going on? Yeah, it's all over the news. I didn't hear about it. I love it. I love it. I had lunch with my accountant sometime and recently, and he was talking about the BBB. And when I hear the BBB, you know what I think of? The Better Business Bureau. That's not what he was talking about. He was talking about the President Trump's big, beautiful bill. And I said, yeah, I've heard about it. He goes, it's going to help you. I didn't know that. And to be quite honest, I don't care. Guys, that's not my concern. I want my purpose to be, how do I represent God in this dark world? And look at this. This is Jesus does this. In Luke chapter 13, here's what he does. He says, at that time, some Pharisees came to Jesus. Now, they were typically trying to trip Jesus up. The Pharisees were typically trying to catch Jesus in something, some violation of their law. Their traditions. But now they're coming to Jesus and they said to him, leave this place and go somewhere else. Herod wants to kill you. It's a matter of life and death, Jesus. You need to go hide. You need to deal with Herod. Here's what's going on. He replied, go tell that fox. I will keep on driving out demons and healing people today and tomorrow. And on the third day, I will reach my goal. In any case, I must press on today and tomorrow and the next day, for surely no prophet can die outside of Jerusalem. I've told you this, folks, before, but in 2016, I sat out the presidential election. I chose not to vote. I did the same thing in 2020. I did not vote for a president. Well, I was I'm not saying you shouldn't vote. I'm saying I chose not to. It was a personal decision because I was trying to reinforce in my mind that it does not matter who's the president of the United States. I serve a king. And his name is Jesus. And the day after the election, whether it's the Republican or the Democrat, or lightning strikes and a libertarian gets in there, my marching orders are the same. I get up the day after the election, and guess what? I'm serving Jesus. Who's in the presidency does not impact me. He really doesn't. And I wanted to reinforce that in my mind. See, because guys, I went through elections. I've only voted, I'm 62. I've cast one vote for president in my lifetime that I felt good about. And he lost. I have not felt good or excited or hopeful about any president. And there's times where I was hopeful and disappointed, and there's times where I was disappointed from the beginning. And I knew I can't let that impact my emotions. Who's president of the United States? Who controls Congress? What laws are passed? What taxes I do or don't have to pay, and I hate paying taxes, don't impact what I'm trying to do as a follower of Jesus Christ. That is my purpose. And Jesus was so focused on his purpose that he was willing to ignore these death threats, which, by the way, that was his purpose, so it kind of went together, but you get what I'm saying. He wasn't going to protect his own life. He was going to fulfill his purpose. Guys, a side note here. Is part of my purpose. He does not want me to be focused on other sin. This is earlier in Luke chapter 13. This is what it says. Now there were some present at that time who told Jesus about the Galileans whose blood Pilate had mixed with their sacrifices. Jesus answered, "Do you think that these Galileans were worse sinners than all the other Galileans because they suffered this way? I tell you, no. But unless you repent, you too will all perish." He brings up another situation. Or those 18 who died when the Tower of Siloam fell on them. Do you think they were more guilty than all the others living in Jerusalem? I tell you, no. But unless you repent, you too will all perish. Guys, I put this in there because one of the things that's very easy to do with politics is to talk about how wrong somebody else is. How ungodly their politics are. Back to what I said earlier. We have to stand before Jesus individually at Judgment Day. We answer for ourselves. And a side note, guys, if it's somebody, another brother or sister in Jesus, I think instead of talking to God about them, you need to be talking with them. I challenge you, I encourage you to unite with somebody who thinks politically different than you. But unite with them about following Jesus. Don't just try to change their politics. You guys get together and pray and you pledge your allegiance to continue living for Jesus, or to up your commitment to following Jesus. Unite around that and let's see what happens to your political differences, no matter who you are. So guys, I don't know where you're at today as we're closing out. My invitation today is very simple. You need to bring your politics and your whole life in front of Jesus. And you need to allow him to expose what he wants to expose. Politics is an easy target, in my opinion. Okay? These examples that I have, these people brought it to Jesus very openly. And as we go out today, my prayer is that we can do that as individuals. That everyone in this room, everyone that claims Greater Alton as their home church, is willing to look at their thoughts, attitudes, and actions and put them in front of Jesus and say, show me what's right, show me what's wrong. And that includes your politics. Let's pray and we'll sing a song. Father, thank you so much for making things so clear if we'll look. Father, for making things, I'll say it, you make things simple. It is so nice to not worry about another human being and what they think or how they act, or for my faithfulness to be dependent upon another human being. Father, that I can be faithful to you regardless of what's going on around me. Father, I want Greater Alton to be a community of followers that are united in this, that are united in fulfilling their purpose to be a good and faithful servant for you. Father, part of that is exposing our thoughts, attitudes, and actions to you and letting you show us our motives, our misguided allegiance, and Father, to show us a closer way of following you. It's in Jesus, our King, we bring this before you. Amen.
I'm so secure. You're here with me. You stay the same. Your love remains here in my heart, so close I believe. Your whole
you'll never let me go.